Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Capitalist Investor. It's a special one this week. For the first time, we have wealth advisor Dave Abate. How you doing, Dave?
Happy to be here.
No nickname yet. No nickname. He's got to earn his stripes around here.
Yeah, we'll get you one soon. And as always, Tony the Tiger. How you doing, Tony?
Doing well.
Excellent. Well, we got a big week of news, so let's dive right into it. Number one, we'll talk about JP yesterday, Powell, and his lovely testimony and the fallout from that. We'll do a little debt ceiling talk, which is pretty much directly related to that as well. And Social Security also tied directly into that talk. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And a very extra special canceled as well. Kind of a two-parter this week. So Dave, welcome. How are things going? And, what do you want to tell the people out there today?
I'm excited to be here. I'm a big, huge raving fan of the podcast. So that's exciting to be in here for my first time. But I plan to, share a little bit of an advisor and a planning angle to some of these topics to kind of see how it filters down to some of our clients' situations so they can better understand maybe what the impact of them personally may be.
Awesome. Nice. Well, we look forward to that, but we really talk like 5 minutes finance now and 25 minutes.
Yeah, it sounds real boring, Dave.
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah,
ancient aliens. Human civilizations. Yeah. That's really what we're into these days.
Perfect.
So if you have any takes on those, we'll circle back to those. But yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday. Comes out on Thursday. Lots of talk out there, like we've been saying here for a while, that the rate hikes likely to continue, a pivot not likely anytime soon.
Higher for longer.
Yep.
We've been saying that, it's going to be long because they can't break the economy right now. And when they do, it's going to probably be irreversible to the point where they'll have to pivot quickly is what I'm guessing. Powell came out and that's exactly what he said. He's talking again today, so we won't have any recap on that, but maybe next week, maybe he'll come out and say something monumental. But higher for longer.
Why is that coming across as a surprise every time? He's been saying the same thing, I think, for 6 months.
The market is hearing what they want to hear. I don't understand it myself. With this goal of 2% inflation, I love, did you guys see where our Senator Warren came out and was yelling at Jay Powell saying, you're going to put 2 million people out of work to get 1% increase in unemployment. And, this is during the inflation talk and all that stuff. And I'm like, aren't you the one trying to give away or trying to cancel school debt?
Yeah.
Which happened would happen to cancel or I'm sorry, increase in inflation.
It's a vicious cycle.
I guess.
and we're just pointing at each other of, who's the real cause of the problem. It's crazy.
It's going to be higher. It's going to be for longer. And, the area of the market that I really feel is going to really feel the pain, if they're not already, is the mortgage industry. As the Fed funds rate goes up, the borrowing rates across a lot of different assets go up. But for a mortgage, a 30-year mortgage is now 7%. And the cost of a mortgage is up over 60% from 18 months ago. So that if you bought a house and this is taking in consideration how prices of houses are even coming down, because they're down they're down the last few months as well. But a $1,500 mortgage last year, or say 18 months ago, today cost you $2,400. They're stripping away the American dream from every homeowner or anybody who wants to own a home, right?
The scenario I saw was in terms of affordability. So the same monthly payment, 18 months ago got you a $400,000 house. That's been reduced to $250,000. So it kind of shows you the real impact. It's crazy.
Yeah. So that So what happens? That $400,000 house needs to come down to $250 for people to afford it.
They got
to
meet in the middle somehow, right?
I guess.
And that's we've been talking about that for a long time as well. Like when does that finally hit equilibrium? Right. When does it finally break? I really should say.
Well, what about all the people that bought during COVID at the peak, you know, they bought a $400,000 house. They're stuck there. They're stuck in that house because they can't sell it for $250,000. Where are they going to come up with the balance to pay off the mortgage?
Yeah, they're underwater for a while.
They're underwater for a while. But think about the mortgage industry. And some of the little research I did is that the mortgage industry is very vast. And it's made up of, and I'll just name off just a few, raw materials, labor, furniture that goes in the house, all the things that go into the house, carpeting, tile, bathroom appliances, things like that, right? And the fees, the fee business, the title company, the bank, all the people making money on the transaction of houses makes up 15% of GDP. That is going to zero almost overnight. Like I think the people that are buying houses, they just need to move. Right? Or selling a house or buying or selling a house right now. Like I talked to somebody yesterday, they have a paid off house and they're like, hey, do you think that now is the time to move? And I'm like, maybe it is. Since your house is paid off, maybe now is the time to move because the market, I feel that the housing market is near the top for, you know, prices, and you may be able to actually find, you know, I hate to say it this way, but a distressed seller.
Sure.
So you can actually arbitrage that and you don't have to pick up a mortgage because your house is paid off. And, you know, and if you downsize in particularly, you know, these people were looking, you know, looking at retirement and say, I don't need this big house anymore. I love the house, but I don't need it. And they would be actually positive money after the sale. I think in that case, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Unless you're absolutely in love with your
house. I hear what you're saying. I think it's going to be case by case, but I think as this economy starts to slow down, you know, and the labor market unemployment starts to peak up, there are going to be more of those, you know, distressed assets to pick off. So I think the opportunity is only going to increase.
Right. Yeah. I think there's going to be, just like 2008, a lot of distressed properties maybe in the next year or so. Because they say with all this tightening, it takes about a year to catch up. Well, they were just kind of like dipping their toes in the water. I think we're at about 6 months, and in about another 6 months, it's going to get – you're going to feel the tightness.
Yep.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that timing, you know, the real estate market always slows down towards the holidays and then to start the year. I think the end of this year – might be when we really start to feel and see that pain in the housing market because it's kind of come to a crescendo and that's where we're at right now. You know, 4 years ago, I don't think there's a person on the planet who would have said, yeah, 7% mortgages are going to be the norm.
Yeah.
You know, it's
And it could go higher than seven because the terminal rate for the Fed, you know, if you hear some of these talking heads after Powell talked yesterday, I mean, the terminal rate could get to 6 or 7% because they haven't even started unwinding their balance sheet and selling the bonds that they bought to create liquidity.
Yep.
You know, I hope they let them go to duration, I guess, but I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think that remains the big unknown. Where's that terminal rate? It seems like it's just been creeping up for the last 6-12 months. Where does it stop? Where does that end?
Good question, man. I mean, it started off at 4.5. It's now at 5.6 for consensus, and that doesn't mean you can't overshoot consensus. So, I mean, it could be north of 6.
Sure.
So. Let's just say consensus hasn't been right so far.
Good point, Derek. But yeah, and I mean, and that's just the mortgage industry. We're not even talking about the consumer. You hear at Walmart, like, hey, people are coming in. They're buying stuff, but it's typically food and necessities, right? Not buying bikes and clothes and, you know, TVs and things like that. They're not buying the super discretionary stuff. They're buying the necessity stuff.
Yep.
So it's affecting all over the place. So we'll see how much this catches up. And, you know, I think they'll overshoot. I said it before. I think the Fed will overshoot on the rate, and they're going to have to probably pivot quickly. I just don't know when that is, and it's, I don't know. We'll see.
Fun times.
Good times.
It's funny because today is really – yesterday and today, thinking about this podcast, that's really the first time that I thought about that. Like, hey, they're probably going to overshoot it. They're just going to keep raising, and then it's going to be a disaster, and then they're going to start reducing right away.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Like the next meeting, pretty much.
Yeah. Things are going to happen quickly.
Yep. I completely agree.
So we'll see. All right. Debt ceiling, kind of related. But, you know, I caught a headline saying that, you know, now that we're at, you know, over $31 trillion in debt, which absolutely ballooned in the last year and a half, triggers fears that the nasty fallout is for Americans. So I believe through, you know, reading everything, emergency measures will have to be taken before June 5th, or there's going to be some big impacts. And some of the things that, you know, a stopped Congress, stopped government means is that they're going to start freezing social support, food stamps, national parks will be closed, national defense is on a standstill, healthcare, like anyone that's getting paid by the government is not going to get paid. I mean, I think the last time they did that, people still decided to work, hoping that they would get back pay. So it's happened before. It's not like it's happened, you know, it's happened in the past. So but this one, I think, a little bit more serious because the debt is just so high. It could delay Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, VA payments for veterans, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff involved that the government pays for.
I feel like we've seen this movie before. It might be like, you know, the third iteration, you know, in the last decade. But the interesting thing is, you know, so I do think it gets resolved, but not before a lot of political wrangling. Right, both sides kind of fighting for what they want to get passed along with this extension.
Yeah. So, do you think they'll go past? I bet you they go past the extension. I don't think they'll come. They move too slow and they're too.
You're right.
Got their
it's
own
like,
their,
it's like trying to agendas. Trying to turn a you know, the Titanic. It takes a long time, right?
Look what happened to the Titanic.
The interesting thing is, in 2011, when we were in a similar situation, and they waited to the last hour, you know, to get a resolution, at the Standards and Poor's, the credit rating agency actually lowered the U.S.'s, you know, pristine AAA rating. And the curious thing was, following that, Treasuries actually rallied. And during that tumultuous time, the interesting takeaway is the U.S. was still viewed as a safe haven, right? People still would rather invest their bond money in U.S. Treasuries, because of the perceived least amount of risk, you know, cleanest dirty shirt and laundry kind of theory. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like going forward. Have we changed? How will this play out?
So, guys, ready for a conspiracy theory?
Oh, yes. Is it about aliens?
No.
Lizard people?
No. No, all I right, wish. Well. Man, I'll come stronger next time. But is this just the rest of the world? And I'm not talking, I mean, China and Russia, like, are adversaries, I would say, you know, the big part of this. But even like Ukraine and the just the rest of the world in different facets, is this their way of bankrupting us? Creating so much debt and, hey, you're the biggest, you know, you're the biggest people on the block. You should be helping everybody. Like, everyone's got their hands out for anything that may happen, whether it's war, natural disasters, political issues. Like, we happen to just, why are we everywhere? We're in Taiwan, we're in Ukraine, we're doing everything for everybody. Like, don't you, is this, I always thought about that. I'm like, is this the way that we're going to go down, is that everyone just sucked all of our money away from us?
Interesting. It could, you know, there's some thought to that. I always thought that whoever has the best military wins at the end. So even if you don't pay your bills, you got bigger guns, I think you still win.
I heard this on like Maria the other day. Like, they had like some retired general or something saying, when the United States shows up to a war game, you know, that's what I call them. We're we're doing war game exercises. We're showing everybody, you know, flexing on everybody, right? they said it's so amazing how like the United States shows up and they run out of missiles, like because we don't have enough money for defense spending. Our defense spending is 10 times everyone else's. Mm-hmm. But it just can't count for any of it. It's all in this black box. They can't audit. It's gone. But I'm pretty sure you don't go to the thing and it's like fireworks. Like, I'd rather watch somebody else fire off their fireworks than let them spend the money. Seriously, though. Yep. Like, why would you go there with all your missiles so you can just make more? So the comment didn't make a lot of sense to me when the general said that. Like, but you know, like China's over there firing off like days and days and days, and the U.S. shows up and they got about a day's worth of missiles to fire off. And I'm like, this ain't 4th of July, man. Like, it's okay. Those missiles cost actually $1 million a piece.
Literally,
not more.
Right?
Literally. Yeah. So,
yeah, I think the one that Biden used to shoot down that balloon was like $400,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kids, experimental balloon, not the one from China. That was an oopsie.
Whoops.
We're gonna send him an IOU.
Couldn't you just put some bullets through the, you know?
You would think so. Yeah,
just put a couple bullets. A lot cheaper than a missile for a balloon. Like that made no sense to me. But
switching
anyway.
To guns.
Maybe it was bigger than I thought. Switching the guns.
Too close for missiles.
All right.
So yeah, interesting take there. You know, I think we're going down the Illuminati path on that one. And I did see Rihanna at halftime throw up the Illuminati sign. So Google that one.
I will. I don't know what you're talking about. I will look that up.
So yeah, you know, I think wrapping up the debt ceiling, we're at around $31.4 trillion. I actually saw this morning debt is on pace for $46.4 trillion by 2033, which is a lot. So, yeah, at a certain point, someone in the government is going to have to get the spending under control. It's just so compartmentalized and out of control in seemingly every aspect. And no one seems to want to talk about that. It's more grandstanding and virtue signaling and all that good stuff. Someone's going to have to get to work and figure out the budget in all these departments because it's out of control.
Does anyone know the last time the we were in the black on?
I could be. Was it Clinton?
Well, I thought so too. That's where I wanted to go. And how long ago was that? 20 years ago?
Yeah, it was in the 90s. Right?
Jesus. Everyone's just been racking up debt since then?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And that was – I think it was only balanced because the tax revenue was so high because – of all the dot-coms and all the money that people were making. So paying taxes on that before those stocks went to zero.
Sweet.
The start of another problem.
Right. All right. And so then, again, inflation and how it's affecting Social Security reform now too, along with the debt ceiling. So, all right. So the trust fund's going to run out of money. We've talked about this a little bit. You know, trust fund's going to run out of money in 2032. What happens? Because payroll takes care of 75% of payroll, the recipients receiving payroll or Social Security comes from us working. So does everyone get a 25% haircut? I got several different ways for them to, I don't know, adjust or fix Social Security, but they're all painful. No one wants to hear them. Yeah. And that's why no politician wants to touch them because they're going to make enemies.
Yeah.
Not just in, you know, not their buddies in Congress and in Senates and senators and representatives, but, you know, actual Americans who are receiving the benefits, right?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, this one caught my eye because, you know, in the first, you know, half of this podcast, Tony was talking about all the, you know, entitlement programs that are, you know, going to be affected, you know, both by the debt ceiling and inflation, obviously. This was the first time, though, that I saw someone from the government. Obviously, no politician is going to touch this, but it was the CBO director, Philip Swagel. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. But, you know, he was on TV. He's from the administration. I think basically on a, hey, let's raise taxes campaign. But he still said, the words came out of his mouth, I've never seen this before, that, hey, if nothing happens with Social Security in 2032, everyone's benefits going down by 25%.
Yeah.
He said that out loud. it's automatic. There's nothing that has to be done. or if nothing is done, that's what's going to happen. Just a 25% across the board reduction in 2032. You know, these these years always seem so far away when, yeah, you know, we're talking about, yeah, them 5 years ago and it was 2041. Like we're the rubber is meeting the road on Social Security. Yeah. Something's going to need to happen.
And by the time we get closer to 2032, that they can run out of money by 2029.
Yeah, probably. Exactly.
It keeps on creeping closer.
And I did want to bring in a planning angle on this one. You know, our clients probably know this that go through our plan refresh exercise, but we've always been super conservative with the Social Security benefit, right? We've intentionally kept the COLA, the cost of living adjustment, on it low,
right,
suppressed at like 1% annually. And, you know, like last, you know, this 2023, everyone got an 8.7% raise.
Exactly.
Right. So when we're understating that inflation piece to it, it can help mitigate where we may land on future benefits for folks.
Right. And that's why, you know, I say it, you know, all the time that one of our company stands for most people. Not every single client is like this, but we tell you to start Social Security as soon as possible because we don't know what's going to happen. In 10 years, you could get a 25% haircut. So why not get $110 today?
Yep.
You know, but if I was a politician, which, you know, maybe somebody will call me and get my take on how to fix Social Security, but first thing is, first of all, we could freeze that COLA. We could, yep, the cost of living, you know, like no one just gets a cost of living adjustment anymore. I know it's going to hurt because everything else around you is going up, but you can't just keep on giving more money, I guess. I mean, that's one thing. It's, again, painful. Everyone's not going to like that. You could prolong it to age 70. Again, work on mortality, you know, work on the mortality tables saying no one can take it until they're 70 rather than 62 or full retirement age or whatever it is. They could tax it fully. You know, there's some people out there that may get tax-free Social Security benefits based on what other income you have during retirement. That's out the window. Everyone's taxed on it now. That could generate that could help save the program a little bit. And then for people working, no one's going to like this, but you get rid of the payroll tax limit. I think it's once you make over $160,000 or some change, you don't have to pay into Social Security anymore.
And that's, Tony, that's the one that I saw. Someone crunched the numbers, and it seemed like it had a pretty drastic impact if you just went that path.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, like less net dollars are landing in people's pockets, right? So you have, mm-hmm, downstream problems. Now less money, consumer has less money to spend. So what cans of worms do we open up,
right,
when we do that?
You know, and you're affecting the high end spender. You know, somebody making 160 grand, you know, like that person is maybe not feeling the inflation crunch as much,
yep,
as somebody making, you know, under that. But if you start taxing them, it's going to be less money into the economy because they take that money and, you know,
sure,
buy things. You know, that's the kind of the high-end consumer.
I actually heard that number yesterday. Do you know how much of the overall tax is paid by the top 1%?
Is it
50%?
It's like 50%.
Yeah, 42%.
Wow. Yeah.
So 42% of the tax revenue comes from the top 1%. So that's pretty astonishing,
yes,
when you think about it. And those are the people that drive the economy. And those are always the first people that this administration goes after in what has become kind of a class warfare battle, in my opinion. It's, hey, these guys are rich. We should tax them more. It's a very I think that's one of the most disappointing parts in what's just going on today is just the juvenile level that every conversation is broken down to. And there's no nuance, you know, none of that at all. It's just, hey, these rich people need to pay more. It's going to have negative effects all the way down the economy if that group of people is taxed at a higher rate.
Well, I you know, and I was trying to explain this to my father-in-law, because we're watching TV and Biden was on there saying everyone needs to pay their fair share. So in Biden's mind, he's thinking that everyone should be paying. If the firefighter making 80 grand is paying $20,000 in tax, you know, that's a 25%
sure.
effective tax rate,
yep.
then why isn't the guy that's making $1 million, why is he only paying $150,000 in tax and paying a 15% effective tax rate? And obviously the person making $1 million is paying more in tax, but there's more lucrative tax incentives for people that make more money. They're in investments and they have more money, so they're investing money, so they're getting maybe favorable more capital gains tax rates exist for them, write-offs, things like that. They you know, somebody making that much money might be a business owner, so they're getting a lot of things written off through their businesses, whatever it may be. So it's very hard. I said for them to do that, to make everyone everyone pays the same percentage of their pay, they'd have to completely blow up the existing tax code, because it would just completely change everything. They can't just make everyone a flat rate.
Yeah.
It sounds simple in theory.
A lot of moving parts.
Very, 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 a lot of moving parts, right?
Yep.
So I hope that made sense. I hope I
– Yeah, know, totally. Absolutely. So. It's lots of serious problems. You need serious people to solve serious problems. I'm not sure if, you know, we have the best and the brightest working on it.
I think we got to start right here, though.
Oh, yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, Sherrod Brown, give us a call. We're happy to come in and teach you about taxes and,
right.
you know, the effect of why people are experiencing this high inflation and why every single Democratic tax plan always starts with tax the rich, but always ends up hurting the middle class. Every single one of them. So with that, let's transition into our canceled segment this week, which actually Dave found this one. It's astonishing, really. You wanna set this one up?
You know what? I was doing a little research for the show, and you know, perusing some news sources, and I came across this. You know, working on Monday, like it's becoming optional. Apparently, like I didn't know. I missed the boat on this.
Like, who is this? Garfield the cat? Is like he hated Mondays, right?
It feels like it's my 11-year-old. Like, do we really have to go to school on Mondays? Like, this is what it feels like. You know, so this is the first I've seen of it. There was the reporter actually did some research on the streets, talking to workers on Main Street to get their take on it. And the biggest correlation I saw, you know, unsurprisingly, is the younger the worker, right. the more they were behind the idea.
right. And again, the idea is bare minimum Mondays. So essentially, you know, coming off the weekend, needing to recenter yourself. so you only want to put in the least amount of effort possible on Monday.
Right. It's, you know, they call it, you know, quiet quitting, which is where somebody is scaling back their work effort because they're not feeling loved by the by their employer, is now called just bare minimum Monday. Like, if you're not going to give me a bonus, I'm just going to take off Monday now and zone out. Now, all right. So Mondays are slow for me. I just my mental, like, I got to get ramped up. Mm-hmm. I'm normally juggling, you know, 5 to 10 things on a given day.
Sure.
I can only juggle maybe total of 5 things on a Monday. It feels sometimes. It's just I'm getting, you know, I feel that, but I'm not going to just take the day off, because then it's just going to start on Tuesday.
You're being strategic with your calendar. You're putting some of your more important right. meetings maybe midweek.
Right.
Saving some of the more mundane things on Monday where right. you know, it makes sense to do that, right?
Yeah. And maybe people just need to find something more exciting. My days fly by. Like, the week fly bys. I don't like to say it this way, but I wish I had more time sometimes, because I didn't get everything done.
Sure.
And I, the week and days move very quickly for me. I don't know about you two, but it's flying by. I'm not bored. So I guess if you have time to sit around and think about what you could be doing and not what you should be doing, you got a problem.
Yes.
But yeah, in that article, so it's actually two different things, I think. So quiet quitting is its own thing, but in that news piece, they said 50% of the labor force is quiet quitting. where they basically just stop working and wait to get fired. 50%. That's 50, half.
Why is production going down?
Again, I mean, that somebody made, you know, somebody made a mouse that the people working from home, mm-hmm. the mouse moves every 5 minutes.
Okay. So
to keep your activity.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, like, hey, my mouse moved. It kept my monitor on. It kept me logged in at work, and I can go, you know, catch a longer lunch.
Interesting.
So yeah, that does that. Now, that device actually exists.
Now the one we'll call solution I could see here is, you know, I subscribe to the work smarter, not harder, you know, theory. Hmm. So maybe, you know, these younger kids are looking ahead and they're saying, you know what, AI, artificial intelligence, is going to be a bigger and bigger factor. And they're thinking about how can we work smarter and not harder? Is that a possibility?
They're about to get their job taken from them by a computer.
In the
meantime, I don't know. What do you think,
Dave? Yeah, I would say no. I would say they just don't want to work. Based on the people they had in that interview, they were not working smart at anything. They just didn't want to do anything at all.
Right. And then, I mean, obviously, if you're catching that person at, you know, 10:30 in the morning, walking the streets, they're not at work either.
It does feel like an extension of just, I hate to bring it back to COVID, but just that mentality. COVID kind of drove people into the remote work scene. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like there's more opportunity to quiet quit or, you know, not work on Monday when you're at home versus not in the building.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And the effects are going to be felt for a whole generation.
Why is it cancel Monday? Like, don't you want to get, you know, start winding it down on Friday?
Friday would be the day.
Yeah.
You're gonna pick a day.
No afternoon appointments on Friday.
All right. Well, you know, Before we sign off, Dave, you have any new conspiracy theories, any aliens?
Yeah, what's your take on aliens, just really quick?
I'm a fan of aliens.
If anyone's listening.
Do you believe in them?
Sure.
Do you think that they created the pyramids?
I think so. I haven't had any first-person encounters.
All right.
But I've seen enough documentaries on, you know, the cable news networks. Mm-hmm. I'm a potential believer.
Okay, I'm a potential believer. We have a candidate.
An aliens guy. You can tell
we got a candidate over there.
Have you seen Ancient Apocalypse on Netflix?
No, but that sounds good.
It's amazing. If you like ancient aliens, it's even better. It gives you even an even better theory onto all the unexplained stuff that is out there, specifically with like the megalith and like the pyramids and all that stuff.
Can they help us balance the budget?
I'm sure they could. I'm sure they could if they can move those, you know, 10-ton stones around,
right?
By levitating them. I'm sure they can, you know, balance our budget.
Well, when they show up, we might not have to worry about a budget.
Yeah.
Ghosts? Are you into ghosts?
Same thing.
Paranormal. You know, I can get behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've seen
any personal experiences?
No, I do not have any first person. I'm not going to talk you out of it if you've had them.
Okay.
All right.
I haven't had anything, which is bothering me to this day. I figured it out. You'd think they would show up and, you know, at least communicate with me. But I got nothing. No ghosts, no UFOs, no aliens, nothing.
My only ghost experience.
Oh, yeah.
I have one. All right, really quick. I know we've got to wrap this up really quick, but this is what happened. I was in the Bourbon Trail. We stayed at this
central. That's a bad start.
I know. It could have been the bourbon, or it could have just been ghost. I don't know.
We were
staying at this bed and breakfast, and it was a century old like jail.
Sure.
Right. And they turned into bed and breakfast, sitting there late at night. I lay down in the bed, and this place was straight from like the 1950s. Like the wallpaper, the core was insane. But anyway, laying there. And I'm laying on my side, and I decide to, like, roll onto my back.
Okay.
And so I, like, swung my leg over, and the bed just went down a little bit more than I would have expected. And it made me kind of stop in place, and I looked around. So I actually went back into position on my side.
Okay.
And I did the movement again at the same force, the same speed, everything, and nothing happened. I'm like, something happened.
Wow.
Wake up in the morning. I went by that. I just brush it off. I'm like, okay, maybe that was something. Maybe it wasn't. I get to the bread and the breakfast part of the bed and breakfast. Sure. The guy and I we're all sitting around, and I told my story. And the guy's like, oh, that's funny. There's a little boy that lives in that room. He's usually pretty playful. So he probably just sat on the end of your bed when you moved. And then like this other people across the way were a little pedo'd, man. They're like, if I knew this was haunted, I wouldn't be here. And blah, blah, blah. Like, that, why isn't that on? Why isn't that on your reviews that this place is haunted?
This was not on Yelp.
It was. I created such a hornet's nest in there, man. Like, wow. I'm like, all right.
You would think that would drive business. Some people would.
If you put it on your review, you're going to get a different clientele, right?
Yeah.
So but that was my only experience. Okay. And it felt real. It was confirmed by the person there that there's been other experiences like that. And
interesting.
That's where I'm at.
So that's a good one. Thank you for sharing that with us. That was awesome.
All right.
You know, everything checks out too. You
somebody
know,
cut this
old,
guy's mic.
Old prisons, known paranormal hotspots.
I mean, they even had the prison down in the basement, and you're walking and you do a little tour, and then they got some, like, you know, dummy in the last cell, like, throws you all off. Man, it's just kind of for me.
All right. Well, we got it all in today. Thank you all for listening. If you have any questions or comments, show ideas, hit us up at info@swpconnect.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in the podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any investment, legal, financial, or tax strategy. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. Please consult a qualified professional about your individual needs.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Capitalist Investor. We have a special one for you. As always, you have me, Derek Gabrielson. You got Tony the Tiger, and back by popular demand. After a while, I believe.
Have you ever been on before?
No.
Oh, you've never been on?
What are you doing?
Premier.
Who are you?
I thought you
Derek
were
Derek Gabrielson? Hey, Dave, welcome back to the show since you've never been on before. What's going on right now?
I swear you were on once before, like in the COVID
times.
Could
have been a body double.
No. Doppelganger. All right. Take three. That's not good. It's not good.
I don't know. That was a good start.